Welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast, where you'll learn how to structure terms and use various creative financing strategies to create profitable deals for short and long-term wealth. Whether you're a buy and hold investor, wholesaler, or flipper, learning creative financing will help you do more deals and unlock profits that you may not even know existed. On the Creative Financing Podcast, we break down actual deals we and our guests are doing and simplify the methods and terms used to execute these strategies. Now, let's dive in and create some terms.
Hello and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Gallegos, here with
Jeff Rappaport.
Hey guys, we want to first of all say thank you. We're almost up to 5,000 downloads, and that's a mile marker for us. So big shout out to all of our fans out there. Jeff, I know you've mentioned that you started to get some emails.
Yes.
People just saying, hey, thanks for the podcast. I enjoy it, and that, I just wanted to tell you that, right?
That's the whole reason why we do it.
So thank you guys so much for all of your support. We greatly appreciate it. Jeff, today we got a couple questions. A couple callers called in. Well, one caller left two voicemails for us. So I want to get that on the show, and then let's discuss that a little bit. Okay. And then we'll just see where the conversation goes from there, if you don't mind.
Let's do it.
So without further ado, I'm going to play this voicemail that he left us.
Hi, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to leave this this comment and question. My name is Doug from Detroit, Michigan, and I really appreciate you guys' podcast. You guys cover a lot of information. However, I'm just not seeming to understand, how do you go about protecting yourself from a due-on-sale clause on a person's mortgage? So let's say that I want to initiate seller financing. How do I make sure that there isn't a due on sale clause in their mortgage agreement to make this deal happen? Thank you.
So he was talking about a due on sale clause. How do you find out if there is one with their mortgage, and what he can do to, I guess, reduce the risks? So first off, every mortgage written today, and you know, for the last, what, 10, 15, 20 years, longer than that, yeah, has a due on sale clause. So you're not going to get a mortgage out there. Very unlikely that you're going to find a mortgage
unless
out there.
Unless it's like a owner finance, it's possible. But conventional loans, they all have them.
Okay. So really then the question is, how do you reduce the risk of the bank calling the loan due, right,
okay,
Jeff? So let's talk about that.
All right. So first of all, I want to refer you back to a couple of different episodes that we did. So we had two different attorneys on, Jax Petty and Jeff Braleo. We've talked about both of how to deal with due on sale clauses, with Jax with contract for deed, with Jeff with all-inclusive trust deed and note. So that would be the first thing. And go back to some of the earlier episodes, like the first three or four, because we talk about due on sale clause quite a bit. But let's address it again, just because I know it's a fear for everyone. So first thing that we need to discuss is that if you're going to use contract for deed or a land contract or something similar, that would be your simplest way to deal with the due on sale clause, since it is not going to change the title. So the seller is going to remain on title, you or your buyer is not. So the only issue that you ever have to worry about the due on sale clause is if the bank were to find out, and if the bank decided that they wanted to call the loan due. This gives you pretty much total privacy that the bank is not going to find out and not able to call the loan due. And it's in a gray area where they may not even be able to, even if they wanted to. So that would be one of the things that you have to understand. So you could always do a contract for deed or a land contract if that's used in your area that you're investing in. The second would be all-inclusive or a wraparound mortgage, depending on, you know, what's used in your area as well. Now, this is where the title actually does transfer. And yes, you are open to alerting the bank that transfer has occurred and that transfer has occurred and that they could be alerted that it's happened and that they may have the right to call the loan due. However, I can tell you this. This happens all over the country every single day. I can tell you we've done some lately where the bank did know. We told the bank. Now, I wouldn't recommend this, but the bank knew that the loan, that the title had transferred to someone else. They don't care. What they care about is they keep getting payments. And it's funny, just 2 days ago, I was in a Dave Kenny, who we just did some
interviews with.
Yes, yeah. I just went to his class, and I was talking to two people about how they did get some kind of letter from the bank saying, yeah, we know that you've transferred this property and that we're going to call the loan due. So I'm not giving any recommendations what you need to do, but I tell you that's very, very rare. But this is what both of them did, both instances. They took that letter, crumpled it up, and threw it in the garbage, made the next payment, the bank accepted it, and never heard from them again. Okay, so you got to keep in mind that if the bank was to call the loan due, they're now taking what's a performing asset that's good on their books and making it a non-performing asset to where they're not going to make any money anymore. Yeah. I mean, if you pay them off, they're done. So it's more of a scare tactic than anything. However, you do need to know that there are certain risks. So you need to know, the seller needs to know, and if there's an end buyer or if you're the end buyer, you know, they need to know. So that's how I would handle it. There's some other ways, and we've talked about them. So the two issues are how you take title. So if you are taking it and it's transferring to you or a new buyer, it's probably a good idea to do it, if you can, in a trust. You can make that so that it doesn't look like title has transferred to anyone. And we'll probably do a whole episode on just that. Because it's a little bit, it's easy, but explaining it very quickly would be complicated.
Yeah, and it's more of an advanced strategy.
It really is.
For sure. So I just bought a house subject to the mortgage, a subject to deal. And so the things that I've done to kind of reduce the risk of the bank calling the loan due is I got separate property insurance.
That was going to be my next point.
I kept the seller property insurance in place and their name on it. So we didn't touch that. And that
should, though, by the way.
Yeah, so it did stay in place.
No, but what they should do is change their policy. If it was an owner occupancy policy.
To like a tenant.
To a landlord policy.
Okay, so that has not been done yet.
Yeah.
So great suggestion there, but we kept the insurance in place. The payment will be made on time every month so that they don't start looking at it. There's one other way to reduce the risk of the bank calling the loan due, right? There's don't change the insurance, make the payments on time every month, and then
don't change the title if you don't have to, or do some things to make it so that it doesn't look like title has transferred. And here's the third one, and this one's pretty simple, is that make sure that you gather all of the information that you need for that loan. So a power of attorney, a release of authorization, so you can actually talk to the bank on behalf of the borrower, that you have internet access to that account. So you can manage it. I mean, because if taxes change and your payment changed, but you don't know it, and all of a sudden you're making not the full payment, well, the previous owner is getting notified by that. Now, that might flip the previous owner out, may contact the bank and may tell the bank this is what's happened. Now, I'm not afraid of that. And this is something that I can tell you back in 2000 when I first started, the strategy that I was most interested in was acquiring property subject to the mortgage with little to no money out of my pocket and taking over debt. And this was the thing I was so afraid of, was the due on sale clause. Well, what if I do this and these banks start calling the loan due? And you know what? One did. I did have one bank call the loan due. Now, I was really pretty early on in my investing career, so I wasn't quite sure what to do. But they basically said, we'll just let you qualify for the loan. We don't need any documentation. We don't need anything. We'll just move it into your name. And I said, okay. So that's what I did. But stop worrying about all the things that can go wrong. Keep it in mind. Make sure that you disclose. But don't worry about it.
Yeah.
This is something that goes on literally every day all over the country.
Right. And so the important thing here is not to get hung up on that one little thing, that one little issue. Well, what if the bank calls the loan due?
Yes.
So just move forward and really just cross that bridge when you get there. And there are, and we'll talk about this in upcoming episodes, but if the loan is called due, there are some strategies that you can put into effect that
will. Well, here's the first one. Take that notice, throw it in the garbage, and make the next payment. And if they take it, there's nothing they can do.
Yes. And then also you can move the property back into a trust where the owner has a small beneficial interest, so they're still considered the owner, right?
You probably could. Yeah. I think we're overthinking this whole thing. It's really, if you think about this, banks are in business to make loans. If they're making a loan to you, Jonathan, and you're paying them, they're happy.
Absolutely.
If you then sell the property to me and I'm making the payments to the bank, they should be happy.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
It's really not. Sometimes they get bored and they have nothing else to do, so they send a notice. But they really don't want to call loans due. They want to receive payments.
Yeah, because they're moving an asset on their books to a liability on their books.
It affects how much money they can lend out. It is negative to them in every single way. They just want to try to maintain some kind of control. So to reiterate, to summarize, do a couple things to protect yourself. And the couple of things are, if you're very concerned about it, do it as contract for deed or land contract where the title doesn't transfer. You have very little to worry about in that case.
Right.
If you do transfer it and you're really worried, look at using a trust. We'll cover that in another episode. Otherwise, don't worry about it so much. Make sure that you get an added insurance policy so you're not making changes or canceling insurance that's already on the property with the bank. And make the payments. Make sure that you gather all the information so you don't freak the seller out and that he calls or she calls and says, hey, yeah, I transferred ownership and I think I made a mistake and what can you guys do about it?
Right.
So,
perfect.
Those are the rules.
Okay, so that was Doug's first question. He then called in again, and he has another question. So kind of more of a basic question. Obviously, he's a beginner, which is great. So without further ado, here's that one.
Hey, guys. This is Doug again. Thank you so much for the opportunity yet again. I listen to your podcast basically every day that I'm at work. And I'm just a new real estate investor, having yet done a deal. I had one deal under contract, but I didn't do the right due diligence. So I'm trying to create more deals. My question is, let's say you wanted to take title for a house, obviously you don't have the money to actually do it yourself, so you want to use hard money. How do you go about structuring that, especially if you are doing seller finance? So if I want to buy a person's home and, let's say, clean it out myself and I go to a hard money lender, I don't have the money to put skin in the game. And also, are they going to be expecting for me to pay back monthly increments when I actually get the property if I haven't sold it yet? Because I don't have an extra $1,000 a part of my budget to pay back on this loan, on this house that I haven't even sold on the MLS yet. So I apologize for asking another question that you probably already covered, but I listened to you guys' videos, podcasts pretty thoroughly, and it's just still not clicking to me all the way. So please, can you go over it again, how to exactly make that happen? Thank you.
Okay, so big shout out to Doug from Detroit, Michigan. Thanks so much for calling in with your questions, we appreciate your support. So if you're looking to get a property on hard money, first of all, you will have a monthly payment usually, and it's just going to be interest only, and you're probably going to have a couple points up front that you have to pay for that. So if you're looking to rehab the property, I mean, I guess your question was, is how do you take title to a property and get a hard money loan and not have to bring any money out of your own pocket, I think. Is that what you got, Jeff? Or?
Yeah, it sounds like he doesn't have a lot of disposable income to use toward investing. And a little confused how he may be able to acquire a property and get it done without using any of his own money.
Yeah. So first off, if you're looking to buy a property with little to no money down, your best strategy would be using some kind of creative financing, buying the property subject to if you can. But you're going to have you need access to money, whether that's yours or partners. And one of the best things to do if you don't have any money is to partner with someone else who does and, split the deal with them, right? So if you're taking ownership of a property and you're getting a hard money loan, again, there's going to be some costs involved. You're going to have to pay a couple points up front. There's going to be monthly interest that they charge. And they're probably not going to fund 100% of the purchase price unless you get a really good deal or you find the right hard money lender. But even with that, if you're looking to rehab the house, you're going to need money. You have to have access to money somewhere, right? So if you don't have it, maybe you know some folks that do. Maybe your parents does. Maybe a friend, coworker, et cetera, someone out there has money. And if you find a good deal, it's really not hard to find the money, right?
Let's talk about a couple of different aspects to this. So, because I think Doug's asking a couple of different ideas, and I think he's getting them a little mixed up.
Okay.
So first is, if you find a property that you can buy with enough equity that you could rehab it and then turn around and retail it and make some money, which is the kind of property that he's talking about, to me there's two ways that you're going to buy it. One is cash. So whether it's your cash, it's a friend, private money kind of cash, or hard money. And that hard money typically comes with some pretty high rate of interest, so usually a point or two or three, which means that, hey, if I'm borrowing $100,000, a point is a percentage, is that, hey, at 2 points, that's $2,000. And typically what that is we're going to lend $98,000, but the loan amount is $100,000. So that's where that hard money lender is going to make those upfront points. And then they're going to charge you 10, 11, 12% or in that vicinity, annualized, interest only. So let's say, just to make this simple, let's say it's 12%, which is 1% per month. So your payment would be $1,000 a month, interest only. And a lot of times they will allow that interest to accrue. So you're not actually making that monthly payment each month. And then they typically want a fairly short term, 6 to 12 months, depending on the project. And at that point, there's a balloon. You're going to pay back that $100,000, even though you only borrowed $98,000, or whatever amount that they may have required for you to have into the deal, plus whatever accrued interest. And then you've got to add all of these costs in to make sure that these numbers will still work with your deal.
Yeah.
Okay. Then the second way is to go try to create some financing with the seller that would, one, be a lot better than these hard money rates, but typically you're going to have to make a monthly payment and potentially put some money down to let the seller realize that you're real. Now, that's not always the case, but they're going to be, they're the minority. It is not going to be the majority. Borrowing hard money on an owner financing deal probably is not going to happen, because now this is where it could get a little complicated, but I'm going to try to simplify it. If Jonathan, if I'm buying your house and I offer to buy it on terms, and your house is free and clear, I offer to give you $100,000 and I'll pay you $500 a month for the next 6 months or a year. I'm going to give you $5,000 down payment, so I still owe you $95,000. And then let's say whatever interest rate or no interest or interest only, it doesn't really matter. Okay, whatever the balance will be in 6 to 12 months. Okay, I've just created a new note on this property.
Right.
To you.
Right.
It's called in first position.
Yes.
Okay. No one else is on the property.
Right.
That's where a hard money lender would like to be.
Yeah.
First position.
Absolutely. Okay?
Very, and I'm not saying they're not out there, but they're going to charge even more money to come in and lend that top part. And that top part would be, so let's say that I'm buying your house for $100 and I'm putting down $5. If I'm trying to go borrow that $5,000, how do I secure that?
By trust deed.
So I would secure it on the property.
Yes.
Behind that first mortgage of $95,000.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, maybe this property's worth $175,000 if it were all fixed up.
Yes.
So that person is lending that $5,000 in second position. They're probably going to want, you know, a high rate of interest because it's a small amount.
Yeah.
To protect their interest. And they're probably only going to be only willing to look at it as if, hey, if you defaulted, I wouldn't mind having this property all to myself.
Right.
So not very likely that a hard money lender is going to lend you that down payment. What you're looking for is one of two things in that particular case. Either private money, where, hey, you know, they'd be happy to lend $5,000, or maybe it's $5,000 plus the repair costs, if. They're secured in a way that they feel safe, that no matter what happens, their money is not at risk.
Absolutely.
And in this case, it probably would be.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they may be willing to do that. I would say a better source, especially being fairly new. First of all, I would not recommend that if this is your first deal, Doug, or you know, first, second, third deal, that you go and do a rehab, and certainly don't go do a rehab on your own. So if you really want to do something like this, go find the deal, put the deal under contract, go find yourself a partner, someone that's experienced in doing it, and learn from them. Yes, you'll give up half the profits, but you won't have to come up with any of the money. They'll come up with the money. And now you can start figuring out how to do this and do it correctly.
Yeah, and it's a great learning opportunity for you,
yes.
Doug. If you can find that partner that has the experience that you lack, you find the deal, you bring that to them, they close on it, or you both close on it, and you split profits. There's no better way to learn than to do that, I think.
And I'm going to throw out one more suggestion, because I'm not sure why it's not being discussed here, but I would absolutely tell you, and I would tell everyone on here, if you're just starting out, don't start out as a rehab unless you're doing it with someone that knows what they're doing. Because I'm telling you, if you go borrow money, even if Doug found all the money that he needed for the rehab, the purchase, the rehab costs, he had not one penny into this, it's not assuring him of anything, okay?
Right.
So rehabbing is a risky business. Know what you're doing before you jump into it.
Yeah.
But this is where I think Doug's missing something, is why does he need any money? Why doesn't he just go find the deal and wholesale it?
Yes.
So whether it's for cash, Yeah, he doesn't have to have the cash. You know, he's going to then go find that buyer and assign the contract and get paid for assigning that contract. Or he's going to create the terms that make sense. Now, Doug, if you don't know how to structure these, then I would tell you, don't go out and start doing this yet. Got to understand how to estimate repairs. Got to understand how to determine the ARV, the after repaired value.
Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously, if you're going to structure terms, got to structure some decent terms for a rehabber to come in. But then go find the buyer and wholesale it and get the fee. That's actually what we do 90% of the time, is yeah. that we're wholesalers. We have buyers. We don't actually close on most of these properties. We can, and sometimes we do. But the goal really is that we find the deal, we negotiate the deal, we give the deal to someone who wants to buy and hold it, rehab it, or do whatever it is that they want to do with it.
Yeah. And I think, Doug, you might be a little confused. And you mentioned that you really haven't got it. And it's because we don't really focus on this podcast. We don't focus on wholesaling specifically. Now, we discuss it as a strategy and how to do it. And we've went into depth quite a bit on wholesaling. But the majority of our discussions here on this show is creative financing and structuring terms. So there are some better podcasts out there for wholesaling specifically, and I would just get on iTunes or whatever and search for wholesaling. But that, you know, that might be one of the reasons why you haven't really got that information on this show, is because we are more owner financing, creative financing centric.
Yeah, but we're also... Yep, we've talked about wholesaling short-term owner financing for rehabbers. I mean, we had an entire episode dedicated to that. Pretty much all our deal or no deals are properties that we put under contract with creative financing, and we've wholesaled. So,
and we talk
what we just don't do is talk about how to do it with cash, which is even simpler.
Right.
Yes, there's only a ton of information out there about wholesaling, but I would tell you, Doug, that you're looking at one of two options, partner or wholesale.
Yep.
And that's, don't get involved in trying to rehab a property yet. You're not there
yet. Yeah, all by yourself. Yeah, absolutely. So, great. Well, we're going to wrap this one up right here because... Okay. We kind of made an entire episode out of this. Thank you, Doug, again, for calling in. We do appreciate that. And we hope that we answered your question. If not, give us a call back.
Yeah, absolutely. We do appreciate it. And we'd be happy to answer any other questions as well. So whether they're about deals specifically or things that we've already talked about or we haven't talked about that you're not quite fully understanding.
Absolutely. So if any of you guys out there want to reach us on our hotline, that is 877-409-8090. Again, 877-409-8090. And we haven't mentioned that on the last couple podcasts because we just weren't getting phone calls. But if we start getting phone calls, I like doing this.
Sure.
You guys can also find us at www.thecreativefinancingpodcast.com. Again, www.thecreativefinancingpodcast.com. Thanks so much for your support. Any last words, Jeff?
We want to continue to bring you content that you can use, that you can actually implement. We'll keep coming up with ideas, but if you have them too, let us know.
Yeah,
we'd love
please.
To address them.
Yeah. Okay, guys, until next time, create some terms.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Financing Podcast. We need your feedback to continue to bring you the best strategies in creative financing. So please subscribe, rate, and review this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We greatly appreciate your ear, and please pass this on. Until next time, create some terms. This show offers general information on creative financing strategies and real estate investments. Nothing contained herein should be considered personal, legal, or financial advice. Every state has individual laws governing the use and type of documents used to execute strategies discussed herein. You should consult with a local licensed real estate broker and attorney before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed, and opinions of the guests are their own. Profits are not guaranteed, and there's always inherent risk in real estate investing.